This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, the Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. And I don't know, guys, I just want to jump into it with a big WTF. WTF Tampa Bay Lightning. What the hell is happening against the Washington Capitals? What's going on?
I think Tampa looks really slow. They look slow on pucks. They look slow on the forecheck. They look slow, like, just generally. And I think Washington, which is crazy, is kind of exposing them a little bit. And I think they've been the faster team in this series. You know, I mean, when it comes down to it, I was looking, shot attempts about the same in, over two games. Power plays, everybody's making a big deal out of it. You know, Tampa's 3-for-11 and Washington's 3-for-10. So that's been fairly even. I think John Cooper makes some good points that they're making plays, that the Capitals are making plays and Tampa's not. You know, I mean, Kucherov just looks completely out of his element, completely frustrated. And I just think, you know, this is a team that's pretty leaky at the best of times. And I think that leakiness is really being exposed at all positions. I mean, they're turning pucks over in the offensive zone that they shouldn't be. Their defense is getting victimized, and I think Vasilevsky has not been as near as good. And we've seen that with a lot of, it's weird, eh? We're seeing that with a lot of guys. Saw it with Pekka Rinne, seeing it with Sergei Bobrovsky, guys who were so much better in the regular season than they've been in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you have to wonder the workload on Vasilevsky. This is a big question mark heading into the playoffs, given how much Tampa had to play him in the regular season. Was it going to come back to bite them? And I agree, Ken, it feels like we're starting to see that. I think overall, again, you're right, Ken, with the overall structure of Tampa Bay heading into this postseason, when I talked to people around the league about Tampa Bay, that was the one question, is defensively, you know, in the regular season, they loved trading chances because when you've got Kucherov and Stamkos and Point, why wouldn't you? But when you pull that into a seven-game series and all of a sudden you've got Ovechkin and Kuznetsov leading that charge against you, and those guys are dialed in. You know, the Caps are dialed in right now, coming off what was obviously a huge emotional win for them over the Pittsburgh Penguins. It just feels like Washington has been battle-tested so much better than Tampa, and you would think that would be an advantage for the Lightning that, you know, they kind of cruised in the first two rounds, but now they're coming up against a team that is firing at all cylinders, and that one little weakness that Tampa Bay had has been exposed in the first two games, and that they've got to stop that momentum that Washington has built up, and it's going to be difficult.
I do think it's mental. Like, I still think, considering that, I mean, there's no Nicholas Backstrom. Just on pure talent alone, I cannot see how Tampa Bay is trailing 2-0 in this series and losing both those games at home. And it's not particularly close so far.
No.
And the only logical reason I can think of is actually an intangible one. And it's that I think Tampa looks checked out. Like, I'm not seeing urgency in their game. And I'm not a big intangibles guy, but that's what I'm seeing. And I think on the flip side, Washington, you knew it was going to go one way or another. It was either going to be happy to be here syndrome after beating Pittsburgh, or it was going to be, oh my God, the pressure's off. Now we can play loose and play our best.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing so far. And what's really fascinating me is, I mean, Tampa was against the best line in the NHL in round two, and the Brayden Point line shut down Pasternak and Bergeron.
And they dealt with that speed.
They dealt with a devastating line, so I thought that they were going to be able to handle another really tough assignment. But maybe what's different about this Capitals line is there's a bit more, well, a lot more physicality. If you're dealing with Ovechkin and Tom Wilson, I think the Capitals, they have a good combination of speed and strength, and it's physically overwhelming Tampa. At the same time, I do think when a series is close, and especially like you said, Ken, the chances and the power plays, it is goaltending. Mm-hmm. And not only has Vasilevsky not been his best in this series after being pretty good in the first couple of rounds, I mean, Braden Holtby, we've said it several times in the last few weeks, but the pressure is not on him because he came in relief. He's doing the Cam Ward 2006 thing.
Yeah.
And I think mentally he's just, he's in a great spot right now.
Right, and I think too, you've got to give credit to the other side. You've got to give credit to the Capitals. They are, as you said, Ryan, they're firing on all cylinders. I wrote a couple of weeks ago that they were like what the Ottawa Senators were in the early 2000s. In order to win, they had to beat their nemesis. Like, Ottawa had to beat Toronto in a playoff series. And then I always thought, if they ever did that, forget it. Like, forget it. It's game over. Mm-hmm. And they're just going to roll through everybody. And I think that's part of the case here, too, is in order to get over this hump and be what we think they can be in the playoffs, they had to get through that series against Pittsburgh, which they did. And now it's almost like, forget it. They're just rolling over, everybody in their way. And I think it's weird because Tampa had a stretch like this in the regular season too. Exactly what they're doing right now. Like, just a real kind of lethargic complacency kind of stretch after they sort of built up that great big lead. And it makes me wonder a little bit about their mental makeup, their mental fortitude, that they allowed themselves to fall back into the pack. In the sort of that swoon. And I think last night was a perfect example. I think they thought, okay, well, we're the Tampa Bay Lightning. We didn't breeze, but we got through the first two rounds pretty easily. We found our mojo. We got our, we're going to win this game. And it's like we just have to throw our sticks out on the ice and we'll tie up this series. And lo and behold, they needed a couple of power plays to get ahead. And then it's almost like it's a reverse image. Like, we're seeing, the Capitals, like, would the least bit of adversity would just crush them before. And then now you're seeing the other way around. Like, Tampa just there was no way they were getting beyond that third goal. And I think John Cooper, the Smith-Pelly goal was the third goal or the second goal? I can't remember. Anyways, he pointed to that goal as being the turning point, when Miller just passed it into nowhere, and then Washington comes back on the transition and scores.
It's interesting too, because I spoke to Barry Trotz about it a month ago, and just the idea that, hey, you guys are underdogs after winning the President's Trophy 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Everything's different now when you're an underdog. There's no, I guess pressure is the word, right?
Yeah.
And I think Tampa, I really do believe Tampa got caught looking past Washington. If Pittsburgh's playing, I think if Lightning are playing Sidney Crosby and Jenny Malkin, they're fired up and they realize what they have to be. I think they're looking past the Capitals. They got punished. But the question is, do you guys think Tampa can come back? I personally do. I believe.
You do,
I mean, they got blown out by Boston in game one and they came back and won 4 straight. So we know they're capable of doing it. And I think just based on talent, maybe they need that little spur. They need that little just spark to get going. I think they can do it. I mean, Washington did it down 0-2 at home to Columbus.
Right.
So I'm not going to write Tampa off yet. What do you guys think?
I'm writing them off. I think that they
which,
can
which
make
means
series.
By the way, everyone, if Ken is saying that, it means Tampa is now going
well,
to win.
Yeah. Well, you know what's hilarious, and I'm just going to mention is my son Lucas is a huge Washington Capitals fan. Like, he's been, and he's not a bandwagon jumper. He's been ever since he was a little kid. He loved Ovechkin, loved the Capitals. He's got like a sweater signed by a bunch of guys. He's met Ovechkin a couple times. Loves the Capitals. And I was like, Lucas, looks like they're going to win the cup. And Lucas looks at me and he goes, Dad, your history suggests that, when you say stuff like this, really, like, the opposite happens. So can you maybe just not say that?
Right.
So there is merit to that. But I think they can make a series out of it. I think they can probably make Washington pretty nervous. They can make it interesting. I just can't see the way Washington is firing right now, and the way they're playing, and the confidence with which they're playing, and the swagger they have. I can't see them losing 4 of the next 5 games. And that's what they'd have to do. They'd have to lose 4 of 5 games. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah. I think Tampa can come back, but I don't think they will come back. I think when you look at the body language after the game last night in Tampa, you could tell they were kind of shell-shocked. And when you think about Washington, as you mentioned, Matt, they're not even playing at full strength yet. I mean, Nicholas Backstrom is on his way back. You're going to get a number one center back at some point in the series, most likely.
If you keep winning without him, that's huge.
Yeah.
Because now they're up 2-0. They don't have to sit there and go, oh my God, we got to rush him back into the lineup.
Right.
You know, they're up 0-2.
If he doesn't play game three, that's cool. That's okay. If he's 89% for game three, then you're like, well, let's get you up to 94% for game four or whatever it is. And I just think that, this Washington team, I mean, they have all the elements, and they're no longer the Washington Capitals that that people have made fun of for so many years.
Interesting. I'm going to predict Tampa wins 5-2 game three. And then all of a sudden Washington is at
then
home.
Then it gets
Then all of a sudden there's pressure on the Caps again to win game four at home, otherwise go back to Tampa, and then Tampa wins that game in overtime.
Okay? Wow.
That's my premonition. Okay. We'll see what happens.
Well, it was like game one of the last series Washington played against the Penguins. They were up 2-0, and I was like, oh, and then I was like, where have you been, Washington? Oh, there you are. There you are. Yeah, it's 3-2 now. Okay.
Oh, boy. A lot of big hirings going on with the eliminated teams, and one of the most talked about, and you could argue controversial, decisions was the Leafs promoting Kyle Dubas over Mark Hunter to GM. I guess first off, do you guys think the Leafs made the right decision going with Dubas over Hunter?
I think it was the decision that they had to make. As good as Mark Hunter is, you've got a guy in Dubas that not only is he young, I mean, he can be there for a long time. Not that Mark Hunter is old or anything like that, but I just feel like Shanahan was grooming Dubas into this role, you know, having Lou Lamoriello there to be kind of the ultimate mentor, just to see how things operate. And you look at Dubas's skill set in analyzing rosters, in making those tough decisions and building a team. A lot of the work's already done. I mean, Mark Hunter is an amazing scout, but I mean, Toronto's already got a lot of the core elements that they need, and they've still got some kids coming up. For Dubas right now, it's a matter of taking a good roster and making it great and making decisions where, you know there's going to be some veterans that you're going to have to jettison. There's going to be some players like Matt Martin that you have to decide what are you going to do with the rest of that contract. And you need to fill some holes. And you're not going to fill all those holes with youth. You're going to have to fill them with some veterans. You're going to have to make some tough choices on that. And I think that, you know, there's another NHL team out there that's going to get a really great hockey mind in Mark Hunter. But I think for Toronto, this was... It was probably always going to be the decision if you really look at it.
Right.
But it was a tough one nonetheless.
Yeah. I mean, I got absolutely eviscerated on Twitter.
You can? Yeah. Not you. Yeah. No, I can't imagine.
Was it on a weekday?
It was on a day ending in Y.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I said I don't understand why they wouldn't hire Mark Hunter over Kyle Dubas. And I got just clobbered by the analytics community. Who, like, guys, you know, really, like, get a sense of humor or like, you know, don't take yourselves that seriously. But anyways, that's another conversation. I went on the record of, you know, a couple of podcasts ago saying that I think that when you have a guy like that who can identify talent, I think that's the most important thing you can have. And I point back to the New Jersey Devils and Lou Lamoriello. And what they did better than anybody else was they not only were able to identify talent, but they were also able to put a value on that talent. And that's a huge, huge thing, because then you have a pipeline of guys coming all the time. And then you don't have to re-sign that guy. You don't have to go out and get that free agent because you've got somebody coming up. And that is all about talent procurement and talent development. Mm-hmm. And nobody did it better than Lou Lamoriello and David Conte. And I just see that in Mark Hunter. And I don't think Kyle Dubas is a bad choice, but he wouldn't have been my choice.
I think you guys both make really fair points. Like, I can see both sides of the debate. One thing that you said, Ryan, that I think could signify that Dubas is the right hire is the fact that a lot of the work is done in the Leafs. I mean, they finished number one in Future Watch, our magazine where our scouting panel ranks each development system. So they are very deep.
Sure.
On the other hand, I mean, you want that river to keep flowing.
Yeah.
But what I think is interesting now is, I mean, we know the Leafs are close. And you look at what were some of the weak spots on the Leafs this year. And I think it is tied to analytics. And it's almost like if you give Mike Babcock or Roman Polak to play with, he will play with Roman Polak. So Babcock is going to decide who plays, but Dubas is going to decide who the players available are.
Do you not think, Matt, that's your name, right? Yeah. Do you not think that Mike Babcock is going to have some say in who's going to be the player personnel? And if he wants a Polak or a Polak type of player, that there's going to be pressure on Kyle Dubas to get that
some
guy?
But I think Dubas will find one who has some physicality but also grades out a lot better than Polak on the analytical side. Okay. Right. Yeah. So I mean, yes, Babcock's still going to have influence, but so is Dubas. It's his job.
Yeah.
So
right. You can have a Roman Polak, but not Roman Polak.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's going to be interesting. And I mean, I don't see those two as a match made in heaven. It's classic old school, new school with Babcock and Dubas. So who knows? Who knows how long this marriage is going to work? But I think Dubas is the type of mind that's going to add the pieces that are missing to possibly a championship puzzle. We know the Leafs are close, but they're not quite there. So we'll see.
Yep.
In Nashville, it's going to be a very interesting summer. I mean, the Predators, they were our Stanley Cup pick, and maybe they were the second best team in the playoffs. We'll see if Winnipeg goes all the way.
Yeah.
Seven games.
They weren't, because they weren't very good in round one either. So
But we also know, I mean, Pekka-Rinne got pulled three times in that series. He got pulled 10 minutes and 31 seconds into game seven. He's going to win the Vezina Trophy, but I wrote a blog on it last week. Even though Pekka-Rinne is going to win the Vezina Trophy, he turns 36 in November. Yeah. He has 1 year left on his deal.
Yeah. Mm.
And time and again, in big game situations, he's crumbled. And the Predators also have the one GM who is known for saying, I don't care, and trading his big stars in David Poile. So do you think we could see a Vezina Trophy winner traded this summer?
Well, I think we're going to see either that or you know, maybe he doesn't get the net to start the season next year. You know, I think UC Saros is a guy that's, in his smaller body of work, has proved that he can be a number one goaltender in the NHL. So, I mean, if he's 36, he's gone after next year anyways, you know, maybe you just speed up that trajectory, right? And Saros becomes your guy, and then maybe you do trade Rene to somebody who's looking for goaltending. I don't think it happens like at the draft or in the off season. It happens if Saros can play and then somebody gets desperate in October, in November, you know, and then they're like, oh man, okay, do we go out and find the next Devin Dubnyk, or do we trade for a guy with a $7 million cap hit? People have talked about, I saw some people talking about trading trading Pekka-Rinne for Henrik Lundqvist. And that's like, no,
just the same guy. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, I think. I think if you're like Philly or the Islanders, you're like, yes, you should definitely trade a Vezina Trophy winner, and we will take him.
Philly especially, because 1 year, you can keep the seat warm for Carter Hart.
Exactly.
Yeah, but Alex Lyon is like, maybe he's a guy that can come in and play next year.
Maybe.
25 years old. He's 25 years old. It's not like he's, you know, over the hill.
Yeah, but I think, for me, I think the ideal situation would be that Saros gets at least 40 games next year. And you don't have to kick Rene outright. Maybe you just kind of platoon. You go on sort of a looser system. And then maybe say, like, okay, when we get to the playoffs, it's going to be UC's crease until he loses it.
Yeah. I got a
assuming he earns it, of course.
Of course. I have a different viewpoint on that, and it's the money talks. You can't pay your backup goalie $7 million. You can't chew up $7 million in cap space, especially when you're a contending team that really wants to get over the top. So to me, if you decide that you want Saros to start the majority of the games, then you must trade Pekka-Rinne. You can't waste that $7 million, especially because what's the one thing we know the Predators need? A number one center. If you can trade Pekka-Rinne this summer and get $7 million off your books, you have room to take a run at John Tavares. And if you're the Nashville Predators, I mean, that would be an amazing fit, even for Tavares, because it's a pretty deep and star-studded team. Ooh. There wouldn't be a ton of pressure on Tavares. P.K. Subban alone would attract he's enough of a media distraction that the spotlight wouldn't always be on Tavares.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Are you saying a Tavares for Rene trade?
Oh, I don't know.
I think, Matt, with all due respect, I think that's a bit of a fantasy hockey
It is.
Approach yeah. to it.
And
First of all, Pecorine has a no movement clause.
Yeah, but I don't believe in no movement clause. Yeah, okay. As Scott Hartnell said, when a player knows he's not wanted, he doesn't want to be there.
Right, right. Yeah. Secondly, I don't think they'd be able to trade all $7 million. They'd have to take some of that salary.
Yes, they
back.
Would, of course.
I would think.
But they still put them in the game.
Right, right.
Cap space wise, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let's say, for example, you trade him to Philly and you have to take back. I mean, you have to trade him for Brian Elliott. So you take a couple million back.
Right.
And then you have Saros and Elliott.
Point something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, it's never. I agree it's a fantasy trade, but also the one guy who does make those trades is David Poile. Right.
Correct.
And actually, it's kind of funny because Brian Elliott is the perfect 1B goaltender. Like, when he's pushing somebody, that's the best case scenario for Brian Elliott.
And is a fallback for UC Saros?
Yeah. Okay. But he always has to remain the fallback.
You got me. You've made me come around.
There Boom! Even though it won't happen, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Wanted to try something new. I mean, we have a lot of readers who just, they've told us they like hearing some kind of just stories about interviews we're doing and players we talk to and GMs and stuff. So I wanted to start, I don't know what I'm going to call this, but let's call it interviews, okay? So I want you guys to tell me about who's the funniest player you've ever interviewed and why?
I'm gonna qualify this on a daily basis, like as kind of a full body of work. I'd have to say it's probably Glenn Healy. He was great with the quips. He was fantastic. I remember one of the years they were playing the Devils in the playoffs, Randy McKay was fairly prominent, and he said, "Oh yeah, the guy over there with the porn star mustache, you know, stuff like that." He was awesome, and he got sent down to Chicago Wolves for a while and came back and just had some hilarious stories. He says, "We get on the plane." He says, "We're sitting there. We're taxiing along for hours. We're taxiing along." He says, "And then I look down. I realize we're on a bus." So he was probably for the full body of work. And the third would be Darius Kasparaitis. He was just fantastic. Like a guy who just was full of life. Went one time in the World Juniors. They lose. He skates off the bench and goes and punches his own goalie in the head.
That's amazing.
Yeah, wow. So like those were kind of some of the guys that I came across.
Nice.
Good. Yeah. The first one that came to mind for me is Neil Yakupov, and just because he's such a genuine guy. And the first time I interviewed him was when he was in Sarnia. And he barely spoke English, and he had Alex Galchenyuk there on the same team, and Alex Galchenyuk obviously speaks several languages. So we were doing a video with our old video guy, Ted Cooper, and Galchenyuk said to Yakupov, he's like, "Hey, like, do you want me to translate?" And Yakupov's like, no, I'm going to do it. And Galchenyuk's like, "Really? You sure about that?" He's like, yeah. So we do it, and he's trying so hard, and he's looking for the words, and Galchenyuk's just losing it off camera. The one answer he said, and we were like, "Well, what do you like about playing with Alex?" He's like, "Good head, good hands, good smile." And he like did this like smile on camera that was just amazing. And then a couple of years later, I guess it was only one or two years later, they had both been drafted, and we asked Yakupov, like, "Hey, when Edmonton plays in Montreal, are you gonna, you know, stay at Galchenyuk's house, it's the other way around. When Montreal comes to Edmonton, are you gonna like have Galchenyuk over for dinner?" He's like, "Oh yeah, he'll sleep at my house. It'll be great." And just really like a nice guy to talk to. So I'm glad Yakupov is still in the league. I know he's had
it's
a
too
struggle.
Bad he didn't turn out to be better, right?
I know, but
that'd be great to have like a top tier player who has like ton of
he's just like a just a great personality. And real quickly, the other player that came to mind was actually Dustin Byfuglien, for one of my favorite stories ever. At the All-Star game a couple of years ago, somebody in a scrum asked him, you know, "What's it like when you really get a hold of a shot?" Because we all know Big Buff can shoot it like few others can. And he says in this like amazing deadpan monotone, "It's like when you hit a really big driver in golf." And some reporter says to him, "Oh, do you golf a lot?" And he pauses and just goes, "No." Loved it.
That's awesome. It's funny with Yakupov, I was once at an Oilers pregame skate, and I was watching, they were playing the Leafs, and Yakupov, the entire skate, all he did was stand in a corner shooting pucks to try and put the puck through that little slot where the camera goes, trying to hit some reporter.
Yeah.
And then he was a healthy scratch for that game. It was pretty good. I think my guy...
Because he missed every time.
Maybe he knew he was scratched.
Yeah.
I think I like the guys who try and mess with you. And I think a couple that come to mind, one is Ryan Kesler. When I was interviewing him for NHL 2K, he was the spokesman for... And I was talking to him about competition. I was like, you know, NHL, you know, you're the face of the new video games competing with EA Sports. And he's like, what's that? I'm like, you know, EA Sports, NHL. He's like, what's that? It's like, NHL, the NHL series. Like, I don't know what that is. I'm like, the NHL hockey. And he's like, I'm just f***ing you. Got me to spaz out. And Mike Camilleri did the same thing to me. And this is one that, like, it was a, there were TV cameras all around us. And I was just in there interviewing him. And I was like, oh, you just live in New Jersey. You know, have you been able to check out the Jersey Shore? And he interrupts me. He's like, why? Because I'm Italian? Are you stereotyping me? Are you stereotyping my heritage? I'm like, no. He's like, I'm just messing with you. So, yeah, I like the guys like that that try to just get in your head.
And Kesler, I mean, you know, his Between Two Ferns thing or Between Two Zambonis thing that he does. I mean, it's hysterical.
Yeah.
It's really good. Like, he's so dry. And there's one with Bieksa on there that just is, it's like... Kareem's out of control. Record time. It's really good.
And Pavel Datsyuk as well, like for his one-liners. I once asked him to describe Shea Weber, and he just said, he defenseman. He my nightmare. And that was it.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He defenseman.
Alex McGillney was really good, too. He was really funny, too. Yeah.
We'll go to some reader questions now, a couple. We'll start with Eric Renkema, and he wants to know, we put out a lot of special issues, the draft preview, Future Watch, our yearbook. Which of the special issues we like contributing to the most, and why?
Well, for me, it's draft preview. Just to have the opportunity to put together that top 100 list and to talk to scouts and GMs and other NHL execs throughout the year to put that together, it's really a fun process. I really enjoy doing those interviews. And you know, we actually have the physical copies here now, so they're on newsstands. On newsstands now. But just to flip through it and you see all the junior team logos.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading it already.
Seeing all the players, and I agonize over the list. I mean, when I'm actually doing it, I'm like, do I need to move this guy? And I think about things last second, and I hate that part of it. But then when you just see it, and to have this... And to see NHL teams carrying it when I'm at the combine or at the draft, that's super cool.
Yeah. For me, it's probably Future Watch because I used to really, like early in my career, I used to really follow junior hockey and college hockey and everything a lot more closely than I do now. So I like to see because for me, I learn a lot from it. Mm-hmm. You know, getting all the lists of the top 10 prospects and, you know, sort of learning a little more about some of these guys who you know, I mean, with draft preview, you're going to see a lot of those guys. But with Future Watch, they're a lot closer and there's probably a lot better chance they're going to make the team, like mm-hmm. the top guys. So it's a lot of fun to get that information and to kind of let that roll around in your head and I mean, a lot of those guys, we've seen them in the World Juniors and everything to this point, but I just really like knowing that, oh, hey, you know, this guy in his rookie year in the American Hockey League has like 23 goals already. Wow, that's pretty cool. So yeah, I like the Future Watch because it really starts to prime you for, you know, then you get to the trade deadline and then you start hearing about these guys getting traded.
Right.
Then you go back and say, oh, wow, he's only a mid-level prospect.
Right.
He's like, oh, wow, this guy's a really good prospect, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you, Ken. Future Watch is mine, number one by far. And I like because it's got a real authority to it because we have this anonymous panel of like NHL scouts, GMs, different executives around the league. And I think it's crucial for building the knowledge base because it gives you an idea of what every team has coming in the pipeline, which helps us better predict what roster decisions they'll be making going forward and what assets they have available to use in a trade, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, Future Watch is king because it builds that background knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go one more question. This is Jordan Sampson saying, what should the Columbus Blue Jackets do with Sergei Bobrovsky? Resign? He's a playoff underperformer. How much and how long should they spend? So question coming because Sergei Bobrovsky, just like Pekka, has got 1 year left on his deal.
Mm.
Bobrovsky, I think, is at $7.5 million right now, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, arguably being the best regular season goaltender of the past, you know, 2-3 years combined. Even this year, analytically, he was still phenomenal. But we know in the playoffs, he's been pretty bad. Especially the fact that I think he was about 900 save percentage, and that was considered an improvement.
So, you get air quotes again on the podcast.
Damn, air quotes. Jeez, we need to FaceTime.
I can't air quotes.
Man. So this is a tough one. I mean.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they have coming up in terms of goaltending.
They got Korpisalo.
Yeah, of course.
Matis Kivliniks from Latvia kind of wending his way, and I mean he will need a couple of years as well. He's still a pretty young guy, so there's nobody knocking on the door.
For me, it's more of a concern of term more than money. He's 29 years old. He'll be 30 after this contract's over with. You know, do you want to sign him to a 7 or 8 year deal?
No.
No, but you may have to in order to keep him. And that's therein lies the whole conundrum here. And I just find with goalies, they can just go up and down and up and down so much more than players. And I think it's all a matter of just finding them at that right time and having them in that sweet spot. And then just like, it's like, you don't want to tempt fate, you know? It's like, okay, we got a lot out of you and thanks a lot, you know, kind of thing. That's a tough one.
I don't know. I think I land on the other side. I think I would still make it a priority to sign Bob because 29 years old in goal years is not that old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he still probably has 4 good years left easily, maybe 5. I mean, Pekarinen is 36, or about to turn 36, right? And he might win the Vezina as a 35-year-old. And Bob, since he changed his training regimen, I did a story on this last year, talked to him and his training staff, and he lost a bunch of weight, and he's no longer injury-prone because he's changed his body. So I think he's actually a lot more durable than he was a few years ago. And he the last two seasons, he's had his biggest workloads of his career. So I do think he's built to last. And I think, yes, he's been bad in the playoffs, but it's still a small sample size. I still take the big sample size over the small one every day of the week. And, you know, you could argue on the other side, okay, it's going to end up like Henrik Lundqvist, where you have this monster contract and it's starting to weigh him down. But even Henrik Lundqvist, isn't he halfway through this contract now? And it's not like the Rangers are losing because of Lundqvist. I mean, if there's a good team around him, he'd still be good enough to help that team.
Yeah.
And Columbus is in a good contention window right now, and a lot of their best players are on the rise. So they're going to want to have a good goaltender to be the backbone for the Seth Jones, Zach Werenski era, right? Pierre-Luc Dubois. So to me, it's worth spending the money on Bobrovsky. And yes, if in 4 years the contract sucks, at least you have a good 4-year window to take your shot, take your swing.
It would be nice to be able to say with some certainty, though, you know, that, you know, we've got a guy that we know is great in the playoffs, you know? Just show us once. Like, just show us once, you know?
Sometimes.
Right. It's funny. It's also
because you talk about it being a small sample size, but then it becomes a larger sample size all the time, you know? And if there's a pattern emerging there, then that is the sample.
I feel like at this point, the most prudent contract would be like 5 over 5, but that's never going to happen for either side.
Yeah.
More so for Bobrovsky's side. He's going to want more term and more money.
He's
going
to want 8. He's got 2 Vezinas. He's going to have to pay him $8 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you want to go higher on the money and lower on the term, I think that's great. And if they can get him for 5 on...
For 5 years?
For 5 years. Then you don't worry about the money
as
much.
Yeah, then you give him $9 million.
You don't worry about the money as much because you've got him on a better term. And I think if I'm the Columbus Blue Jackets and it's a matter of stretching out the term to get the cap hit lower or compressing the term and making the cap hit higher, I'm going to go with the compressing the term and making the cap hit higher.
Yeah, that would be the most prudent if they're going to do it, is shearing on the... on the term.
Yeah.
All right. It would also be very prudent to take your betting chips, place them on Tampa Bay to win game 3 in Washington. Mark my words, 5-2. Thanks for listening, everybody.